there, and welcome to the Blind Handyman Show, recorded at the Little Ranch House on Southwood Drive in Lufkin, Texas. And for the next hour, we're going to talk about building, repairing, and maintaining, all designed with the blind in mind. Here are the hosts of the Blind Handyman, Don Shaw. Hi, Don.
Hello, Mr. Tom.
And Don Patterson's back with us today. Hi, Donald.
Hi, Thomas. It's really great to be back.
Hey, all right. I'm Tom Houston. Now, here is the creator and producer of Blind Handyman, ladies and gentlemen, Bill Parr.
Yes, hey, wonderful. Great to have you with us all, everybody. Hi, everybody. Welcome to Blind Handyman. This is show, believe it or not, number 10. It's just, I can't believe that we've done 10 shows. It just seems like only yesterday it was just a dream.
10 weeks of Blind Handyman.
10 weeks of Blind Handyman.
Who ever heard of such a thing?
Anybody listen to this stuff on the internet? I guess they do. Anyway, Don Patterson is back today. Donald, how are you?
Well, I'm doing great. My mom's doing a lot better. I guess the listeners knew why I've been absent.
Yeah.
And so, like I say, everything's looking up on the home front. And
how's that remodeling project coming? You want to tell us about that?
Or? Well, yeah, I've got all of my ceramic tile down. My kitchen is really finished. I have to hang the microwave vent hood combination, and then that's about it. I've done Venetian blinds, and I've got a couple of doors on the cabinets, bottom cabinets that I need to redo, touch up, and put back, and then that part of it, I'm in the downstairs bathroom now, and I should be through with that sometime this weekend. And so then I really just have one more bedroom to complete.
Let me just say for you totally blind folks out there, Don has pretty good vision. So you did the painting, and you did everything really but lay the formica, didn't you?
And the ceramic tile. I helped lay some of it, but then it didn't take me long to decide that I'd rather be anything but a tile.
Out of the tile biz, huh?
But, you know,
now,
so
we're talking about the kind of tile, the square tile that's put out with grout.
With grout, ceramic tile. Yeah. One square foot. Each tile is a square foot. And it's probably, we had about 800 square feet laid.
My goodness gracious.
Tile.
Did the guy really start in the middle?
Yes, he does. Now you only do that in your first room. I mean, you start kind of in the center, and then I had an entry. I went from an entryway all the way through the family room type, and then kitchen, and a downstairs hall and bathroom, and they're all connected. So he sort of picked a central spot to do when we did the den.
Yeah.
And then the other guy, when I did the rest of it, we just had to start where we had left off. So.
So, but you're setting the commode Monday, or you're gonna get somebody? Are you gonna get somebody? Because
I'll probably have a plumber do that.
Because you have how heavy was it, microwave?
Well, that microwave was yeah. I don't know, it was about 65-70, about 80 pounds, I think.
Uh-oh.
So you seem to have possibly
done some serious damage to my back.
The old back skis kind of is pulled out a little
bit. It's not easy being 60.
It's not. And speaking of being 60, you turned 60 last Sunday.
Yes,
isn't
I did. Yeah.
Is that amazing?
Yes, sir, Ray Bob.
60 years old. Like, since he's blind, they gave him a cake that said, "Happy birthday, David." Figured he wouldn't know the difference, you know. That's what they used to do to me when I was a kid, give you the cake that's a reject cake. Anyway, we had a nice little party for him, and he got some nice presents. You eat all those millionaires?
I thought you'd
bring those over. You might share them with your buds. Anyway, 60 years old, and it's no difference in being 60 and 59, except your back hurts.
Yeah, that's right.
All right, I guess we should get along to email, guys. Did we get the email this week?
Well, yes, we did. And here's the first one. It says, "Hi, folks. A friend of mine relayed the information to me." This may be the first email we ever received that they weren't listening to the show.
Yeah, I saw that.
He says, "I have not yet heard your show, but it sounds great. I've been trying for some time to convince the TV stations around here to do a few shows. I am not an expert, but I do enjoy doing woodworking, carving, and all of the repairs and projects around the house. I wonder if you could send me a bit more info about your show. What subjects do you cover? Is it a call-in show with questions? Do you have a panel to discuss different projects? Do you take an instructional approach? I'm going to try and catch your show, but I've not yet listened to radio on the web. Thank you sincerely, Armando Del Gabo."
See, that would be the thing to do, Armando. You need to listen to the show, and then you can answer all these questions for yourself. We'd love to have you and hear from you when you do listen to the show. We try to kind of, we have a panel, and yes, we kind of take a proactive approach and try to explain how to do things. But the thing to do, my boy, is listen to the show, acbradio.org, the mainstream. All right.
That's exactly what we want you to do.
Right.
Okay.
Tell your friends.
Hey there, I'm listening to an archive of show 8, and I heard you mention log splitting. I found something recently that seems to work quite well for casual splitting. It's a wedge that's welded on the end of a long pipe. Now then, over the top of that is a fitted, a pipe of larger diameter. Now, a larger pipe is plugged at the top and is heavily weighted at the top with lead or something. To use it, you stand the log on its end, set the wedge in the log, then raise the outer heavy pipe up as far as it will go, and then just let it slam down repeatedly until the log splits. Now, it slides down over the smaller pipe and hits the wedge at the bottom. Now, this thing is really cool and eliminates the need to aim a sledgehammer, something I wasn't very successful at. The one I bought came from logsplitter.com, and it cost about $60. Ouch. I also read about splitters that use a hydraulic car jack to create the force needed to split the log.
Yeah.
If I did a lot of wood splitting, I'd definitely try one of those. And this is from Jerry Barrier in Shrewsbury, Massachusetts.
Well, we did try one of those. Don Shawn, I guess. I was telling John Tatum, my brother-in-law, I've told this story before, told us, I think it's on the thing, that he'd show us how to work it when he got home from work, and we'd split a half a quart of wood by the time.
Yeah, we'd done figured that out, hadn't we?
Yeah. I'd like to look at this thing, but $60. You buy a lot of wedges and sledgehammers for $60. You
know? I was proud of it, aren't they?
They are proud of it. I'd like to check it out and see it. I wonder if our favorite hardware store has one.
Hell no. I bet you'd be something to ask them, though, wouldn't it?
There's a site called woodsplitter.com. I mean, is that something?
Yeah.
There's everything.
Everything's.com.
All right. Anyway, we're going to talk about wood splitting again in just a few minutes, Jerry.
Okay. Hi there, Phil and the guys. Jim in Embarrass, Minnesota again. Thank you for all of the kind words. You sure made me feel good. Didn't really know I was that different. Let's see. I've replaced the shower head. I've fixed the handle in the toilet using a piece of 12-pound fishing line because the chain was too short, and we used that setup for about 6 months till I got a new handle. Now, you mentioned stud finders. I've been wanting one of those. Do you know of a blind-friendly one that beeps? Most of them are just the light that lights or a bar flips up in them.
Yeah.
But it is behind the plastic, and there's no way to tell. I do have an audible level, not the one you demonstrated, but it works. Oh, yeah, and the stuff to fix drywall or plasterboard is called spackle. It's like wood putty, but it hardens in plasterboard. We have filled a large crack in a wall. Just fill the crack with spackle, then put the tape over it, and voila, all done.
Really?
If you have any other questions, just ask me again. Keep up the great work. And this, of course, is Jim Samanich.
Yeah.
Well, they make a stud finder that beeps. I have one.
I have one.
They do.
And I think mine costs about $15.95. I think they're anywhere from $10 to $15 and anywhere, Lowe's,
like mine, it beeps,
Home Depot, Walmart, maybe. I don't know if that's a Walmart.
I think I got mine at Walmart. That's what I was fixing to say. Okay. I think mine can't, but I've had one for... I mean, that's not a new thing. The beeping stud finder is not a new deal. They've been around for a long time. So you should be able to find one of those. And I'm sure that the blind companies, LS&S Group and Full Life Products and all that, they probably have stud finders. And maybe we'll have better information on where to get one later. Right, Donald Shaw?
That's right.
All right. Go ahead, Tommy.
Okay. It says, hi, I just happened to catch your number 8 broadcast and thought you might be able to help me locate a talking tape measure. I've heard that they are available. Now, the purpose for which I use it would not be a handyman project. Rather, it would be to measure the circumference of an extremity. I'm a physical therapist, and I have occasion to measure a person's leg to monitor swelling. That a technique is to measure the circumference every 4 centimeters from the foot to the thigh in some cases. Now, here's what I've tried and the problems I have had with it. I bought a long zipper, 36 inches long, I think. I sewed a tape measure to it at 4 centimeter intervals. The edge of each tape measure is even with the teeth, along the zipper. I then glued Velcro along the length of each of the tape measures and sewed a small strip of Velcro along the zipper so that the zipper can be placed along the length of the leg. The tape measure can be wrapped around the leg and fastened along the zipper with the Velcro, then the zipper can be opened and removed. My thought is that a sighted person can then read each tape measure along the zipper teeth. This would allow me to do the measuring myself and have a sighted person read the tape measures at a later convenient time. Any means I have considered to mark the tapes in Braille has not worked because I need accuracy to the millimeter. If you're familiar with the talking tape measure, do you see how it might work for this purpose? Can you tell me where I might purchase one? Can you think of any other method that would work better than the talking tape measure to solve this problem for me? Thanks in advance for any help you can give me. And this comes from Jolene Ferguson. Thank you, Jolene.
Well, the tape measure won't work because it's not flexible enough to go around. It is a long. I mean, it's just like a regular tape measure in that it is convexed, or it's bowed on one side. So it wouldn't. I don't think it would bend around a leg. It will measure millimeters, centimeters, feet, and inches. It would do it. I emailed this lady. We thought about if you had some sort of flexible plastic that you could put around the leg and then mark it some way, like with a little clip or something, and then measure the plastic with the measuring tape, because it would work for that. That would work. Don, you did a little research on this, didn't you?
Yeah, we knew some folks here at Hanger Prosthetics that we checked with also, and they looked through their product catalog and talked to the main man there, and he said that was a great idea with the zipper, and the setup that you had was just fantastic. And really didn't know of a better idea than what you had. At least nothing that would be, with the accuracy would be the problem that talked.
I just can't believe that there is not a big thing like a long, 3-foot-long blood pressure cuff. How long is your leg? 2 feet, 3 feet long? Anyway, that would wrap all around. Everybody's legs are different lengths. Anyway, they would wrap around the leg and would have a measuring device every 4 centimeters, I think she said.
Yeah.
And would read it like a blood pressure cuff or with the same sort of thing. And it would take, instead of taking one reading, it would take 20. And then you'd be able to download them to your computer and bingo. I just can't believe, if nobody makes one of those, we need to make one and sell it on the Blind Handy Man website.
We need to invent it, don't we?
Yeah. Well, it wouldn't be an invention. It would just be a reusing of the technology, but it just seems like, I mean, sighted people, I ask her this question, how do sighted people do the measuring? And they do it with a measuring tape, like a dressmaker would use, I guess, right?
Well, yeah, but then they told me at Hanger they actually have the same type, not the same exact setup, but they use a paper type of measuring tape that are along a strip ever so many millimeters, and same kind of deal except in paper that isn't as good even as what the idea that this girl is.
That's a very unique idea, obviously, as a mechanically inclined sort of a lady.
Oh, sure.
But we'll keep doing some research, and we may come up with something, or someone may email us an even better idea.
Yeah, someone may have a thought on it.
On how to do this.
Yeah, I'm in the process of trying to do a little research in that regard, especially like with millimeters and milliliters and that, because I had a blind student who was taking chemistry, and we were into maybe looking up the beakers and measuring devices in Braille and or accuracy, and so I'll continue to do a little research and see what we could come up with.
You know, they make a thing, when we talk about this later, that fits on the side of a glass that'll tell you when the water hits it. Anyway, that might help your student. Anyway, is that it? Huh?
Yep.
Is that it for email?
Well, we have one that you emailed to a lady. That you wanted to talk about.
Yeah, Sean, you're familiar with this Fredhead database that the printing house maintains?
Yes, sir. Sort of familiar with it.
And you go to APH, is it APH.com or .org, right?
I think it's .org.
American Printing House for the Blind, APH.org, and they have a database of questions and answers, people that have asked different questions, and this Maria Delgado does the research, and she attempts to find out how blind people do things for other blind people, and they contacted Blind Skills, And Blind Skills had heard about the Blind Handyman, so they contacted me. And so I wrote this and let them put it in their database.
All right.
Okay. It says, I was born in 1940, raised in a city, and splitting logs never came up in the daily activities of my family. Our heat was provided by gas or electricity. I really never knew which, nor was I overly concerned. In 1976, my first wife and I moved into a large house with, of all things, a working fireplace. It was a house in the woods, and my children and I decided we could probably harvest some wood on the property. I didn't know anything about fireplaces, and the first thing we did was cut up a large pine tree that had fallen and split it into five, or split it to fireplace length. This was a rent house, and the owner had left a couple of wedges and a sledgehammer in the garage. In case you don't know what a wedge is, it's a thick, heavy piece of cast iron, usually 4 to 6 inches wide and approximately 2 inches thick at the top, that when tapers to at a sharp edge at the, it tapers to a smart sharp edge at the bottom. At first, I did not know what to do with them, but my stepson did. He showed me how to split a log by holding the wedge in an upright position, tapping into the top of said log, and then pounding the wedge into the log until it splits. Back to that pine we cut and split. If you know anything about fireplaces, you know that pines burned like, pardon the pun, a house of fire. Now, the fence learned that pine is not good to burn in the house as it creates much rosin and tends to clog up the chimney. I have also learned about rich pine that is just the thing for starting a fire. If you're careful and start with a small splinter, you can catch this stuff on fire with just a match. Once you have a large enough piece of rich pine burning, it will burn hot enough and long enough to catch your primary wood afire. I'm sure there will be other ideas on the subject, but I recommended you start your log splitting adventure by finding a small sledgehammer. Find someone at a hardwood store, or a hardware store, I should say. Have them make you a sledge with a short handle and a 12-ounce or heavier head. You're taking short strokes anyway, and the bigger and heavier the head, the faster the wedges will penetrate the log. Now, if you're lucky enough to find a log that will stand up without being held, you can strike the wedge from a standing position. But first, you will probably need to hold the wedge with one hand and then tap it securely into the log. If the log won't stand on its own, find something to sit on, put the log between your knees, and let the hammer down. I live on 7 acres, part of which is still wooded. And some years ago, we had more hardwood then we could split by hand. Now, we rented a wood splitter and split about 2 cords in one afternoon. It was one of the noisiest pieces of equipment I've ever been around, but I discovered I could operate it as well as anyone. And the way I came to this conclusion is another story for another time, but let me say, my brother-in-law said he would show me how it worked when he got off that evening. In closing, let me leave you with this thought. When my children were small, they would hold logs for me, their totally blind father, never thinking about the fact that I couldn't see where or what I was striking. Fortunately, we never had a serious accident, and they both have all their body parts intact. If you want to discuss wood splitting further, my email address is...
Yes.
And there
and
we go.
And it is.
And that's it.
So anyway, that's on the Fredhead database. I haven't looked at this, but I guess there are answers to all sorts of blind problems, how to solve blind problems, so it'd be a good thing to put in your favorites and,
sure it would.
And go look
what
at
what he didn't mention was that after his kids got a little older, they refused to
split. Of course they did. I'd say neither one of my kids would hold anything for me now, would you think?
Uh-huh.
All right, are we already at break time?
Yes.
We'll take a short break and set up our guest. We'll tell you about our guest in just a minute. Back more with Blind Handyman after these messages.
when they're not broadcasting.
This is Steve Mazura.
It's Robin from the Aussie Kaleidoscope.
Living on the edge.
I'm Roger Cool.
The KJS Show.
Hi, this is Patrick Perdue from
the ACBRI DJs are hard at work creating personal web pages about their shows, the music they play, and even a bit about themselves.
Now we're accumulating these web pages into the ACB Radio Interactive Broadcasters Web Ring, where you can learn more about the personalities behind the microphone. Go to www.acbradio.org, then choose the interactive link. From there, you can choose the link that will take you to the ACB Radio Interactive Broadcasters Web Ring.
Latest breaking news stories, visit the ACB Radio newsroom at www.acbradio.org. All the news, all the time. From the world's leading news organizations like CNN, the BBC, the New York Times, the Toronto Star, the Wall Street Journal, and more. That's all the news, all the time, in the ACB Radio newsroom at www.acbradio.org.
ACB Radio Mainstream, now delivered live to your phone in the UK using phoneanything.com. The internet over the phone. www.phoneanything.com.
Mainstream, the talk of the blind community. Our email address is blindhandyman@hotmail.com. If you would like to be a part of the show, leave us a phone number and we will contact you soon. Now, here's more of today's show with Phil Parr.
Thank you, Jan. And Jan is the one who went. Jan, by the way, there are some radio headphones on the piano there.
I love it.
And we're listening on 99.5. FM. It's a little small station that not too many folks know about. Anyway, that's our method of monitoring 99.5. It's just sort of a neighborhood radio. Yes, it is, friends. Well, ladies and gentlemen, our very special guest today. He's a wild bull rider and a rodeo fighter and a pretty fair windmill man. Ladies and gentlemen, here is the snowman.
Hey. All right.
How are you, sir?
Oh, what an intro. I don't know if I can live up to any of that.
Nobody believed it either, did they, huh?
Coming from you, I'm sure they don't.
They probably didn't. How are you today? Are you at work?
Yeah. Oh, I'm working, yeah. Not like you guys.
You have must be a really good job. They must love you there.
Well, we get a little bit of liberty. You know, as long as you get the work done, the long-term goal is the main thing.
And so they don't mind you. They don't mind you doing radio interviews. I guess you don't.
Oh, yeah, the little minute-to-minute stuff. What's that?
You probably don't do too many.
I don't do too much.
And 60 minutes doesn't call too often.
No.
Anyway,
it's either that or I'm not very important around here, and so my screwing off doesn't matter. I don't know which it is.
So they don't really care. Anyway, I first discovered you when you were doing your show on ACB Radio. This has been a year or so ago when you were doing your just ad-lib, wonderful, funny, 30 minute or an hour?
Yeah, it was a 30 minute Snowman Radio broadcast.
Snowman Radio broadcast.
Yeah, still going on Live 365 if you're a preferred member. But you have to be a preferred member.
So you could go and listen to those on Live 365, or you have
if you're one of those.
If you're one of those preferred members.
Right.
Well, we won't even ask you how you get to be a preferred member.
Pay your $5 a month. That's a terrible deal.
That would be it.
But we're working on a best of CD that hopefully I'll have the time to edit together in the next 2 or 3 months. I don't know. We'll see. where I just scraped together some of the best pieces of those shows. In fact, right now I'm working on an HTML listing of it that I'll put up on the web shortly.
Boy,
to talk about what was talked about in each show and all the wacky things that happened, and that'll give me a guide to go find the good stuff and put it together in one piece.
Did it just become too burdensome to do? Did you just get tired of doing it week to week, I guess?
Yeah, it's a lot of work. Well, yeah. See, I made it sound like you guys do, except it was one guy doing it. You know, all the chit-chat and interaction, that was one guy.
Yeah, you had several characters on there, but it was all one person, and that was you.
That's right.
Man. So Hefty Genitals is not a real person.
No, unless you'd say that he's really me.
Okay. Well, I just checking. I just like to check these things. So, we really want to talk to you about doing handyman things. Do you do woodwork and do you do repairs and things? Or you?
Well, yeah, I do. I do what I'd call rough carpentry around the place. Mm-hmm. We have 3 acres in the country, and I'm the maintenance man, so I get to do some stuff like that. But I don't do any of that really fancy, fine cabinetry stuff like Don does. You know, I nailed a board to a post the other day, and that was pretty good.
Yeah? Well, yeah. Don has a lot more sight. Don has a lot more sight than you and I do.
Yeah. Well, we're not interested in anything he does then. I want to talk about how totally blind guys do stuff.
Well, we try to cover all. We have a sighted person, a person who drives. We have a very good partial sighted person. We have a sort of a semi-partial sighted, and then we have me, and we didn't plan it that way. These are the guys I like to drink
just
with.
Just the way it worked out.
Well, you know, I think a lot of blind folks that don't do some of these more mechanical things, when they listen to a sighted guy or a partially sighted guy say he did something, they say, yeah, well, sure, you know, you could do it because you've got some sight and you used your visual techniques, but how in the world would I do it?
Yeah.
And I think that's what I really look for in this program is, as a totally blind guy, how in the hell am I going to do that? And there are, turns out, a lot of tricks that you can use to do this or that.
There are many things.
But then there's a lot of things, too, that you do, even though you have sight, that blind people could do automatically. And I guess we try to cover that. Like, for instance, driving a nail. Mm-hmm. Good-sighted carpenters don't have to look at that nail.
I don't imagine.
And like when I nail, I don't necessarily look at that. I mean, after you hit it the first time, your hammer will just go there.
Yeah. If you hit it a little bit offside, you can kind of feel the way it bounced.
Right.
So you know you're starting to get off a little bit. You know, if it bounces off to your left, you know you'd make this minor little tiny correction. And I'm saying this is just off center slightly, but not so much so that you missed it.
Right.
And the other thing is, I wonder if you... I find myself doing this alternating thing when I drive a nail. I hold the nail between my thumb and index finger, and I open my hand so that my finger and thumb pull away from the nail as my hammer is coming down.
Okay.
It strikes, and I feel it, bounce one way or the other, or it bounces straight up. If it bounces straight up, I know I'm in good shape. I'll just do that again. As the hammer is coming back up, my fingers close again and grab the nail so I get another fix on where it is. And I'm just doing that alternating back and forth, always getting my thumb and finger out of the way before I strike, and that's...
Well, obviously there was a time when
you hit it.
There was a time when you didn't, or you wouldn't know to do that.
Oh yeah. Oh, and it can hurt.
Oh, it can. Oh, yeah. It's that. Yeah. Remember building those steps for Tom's trailer?
Yeah.
For Tom's mobile project. I hit my thumb not once, but I thought, well, I won't do this again. I hit it again.
I learned some new words that day.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. Gives you a chance to kind of practice and dust off some of those you may not have used recently.
It does indeed.
Did you hear the suggestion that the guy wrote us that you cut notches in the side of a board and you put it up against the nail to help hold the nail straight when you're driving? Did you hear that?
No, I didn't hear that. But that's kind of interesting.
It's a great idea. Yes.
The hardest part is when you're those first few strikes,
yeah.
Once you get it down there, it can't bend as easily, and you can be a little bit offside, and it doesn't matter that much.
Yeah. Anyway, he said cut different notches. I haven't done that yet because I've got a nail gun, so I don't. I don't drive too many nails anymore.
That pretty much takes care of that, doesn't it?
Yeah, but our friend Don Shaw here shot his finger with it a couple summers ago.
He didn't know the Snowbarger index and thumb removal. And
Had to do it.
You don't want to do that, boy.
It hurt, hurt pretty bad. So you do maintenance, like if a faucet is dripping in the bathroom, do you call somebody or you do it yourself?
No way, man.
You do
I'm going to go in there and deal with it myself. Yeah. Those people charge an arm and a leg, and I can do that.
Sure
I mean, that's the kind of stuff I can do.
And you have, I heard you talk about your barn. Do you you don't grow crops or you don't have cattle or anything? You don't.
We have two horses that are mostly pets. We used to ride them, but we're getting old and don't do that as much anymore.
Yeah, so.
But they do damage. You know, they chew boards up, and they have to. That means they have to be replaced. Or most recently, I installed a new waterer for them, and they got in a little tussle, and one of them backed up and just kicked it over and trounced the crap out of it. So we're starting over.
Man.
That's what got me into nailing the board to the post the other day.
So horses for blind people. You used to ride a horse. Did you do? You did this with your sighted wife?
Yeah, she would. Well, sometimes she'd be in front, and my horse would just follow. You know, I mean, I would have to work to not get my horse to go along with her.
Mm-hmm.
But there were times when we would go down about a half mile from where we are to where there's a nice big long dirt lane that they just know, and they love that. I could just cut my horse loose on that lane, and she's going to stay in the road.
That was going to be my next question. Could you open up? I mean, could you say, giddy up, like
you
Lone Ranger?
Let her fly, and it's great.
That would be the neatest thing in the world for a blind guy.
Nice fall day, a sunny afternoon, and it'd be fine.
He has about four sunny days up there where he lives, don't you?
Oh, no, we got a lot of them. We got six or eight.
You do. You have it. I bet summers. I bet there in the summertime it's wonderful.
And it's not so hot, as it is down there where y'all live. And, of course, I lived there once, so I know.
You lived in Dallas at one time, didn't you?
Yeah, and in Austin for a couple of years.
Uh-huh. And you, at that time, was Jim Schaefer living in Austin at that time?
Yeah.
Is that right? I've got to go see him. He's a fiddle player, and I've got to go play some music with him. I just haven't found the time to do that.
Yeah, we're old buddies. We went to school together when we were kids.
To the Iowa school, didn't you?
Exactly,
Iowa school. And I forgot to ask you, what do you do as your means of employment?
I'm an electrical engineer by training, and I do device software programming, which means when you think of software, you think of programs that run on your PC, but there are also a lot of small computers, little microprocessors that are in devices like in your CD player or your VCR or your microwave or your car.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that kind of device that I write programs for. I work for a company that that manufactures valves that are used in, all the way from pharmaceuticals, paper mills, oil refining, pipelines, you name it.
Mm-hmm.
And we build these controllers that you bolt on the side of the valve, and the controller looks at the position of the valve at the moment relative to some command signal you've given it, telling it where you'd like it to be, and it makes the correction and puts it in the right position, and it analyzes the behavior of the valve, looks for increasing or decreasing friction, control responses that are just outside of the norm, and then we'll let you know that you need to do a little bit of maintenance on the valve.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and you write programs for this stuff. Are there others? I guess there are others at this company who also do the same identical job you do.
No, there aren't actually. I'm the only one. The only one who works on that kind of device or does that kind of software in this division. Mm-hmm. We're really a division of Emerson, and Emerson Electric has a lot of people who do that kind of thing, but none of those people are here.
You're the only one there at the plant where you are.
Yeah.
Well, that's job security they got there. And you learned to do this at college, or you've learned to do this through life, or just figured out how to do it?
I was an electrical engineer out of college, so I knew about electronics, but I really didn't know that much about computers. This was in the early 70s. You know, I thought a computer was a window you took your cards to. I don't know.
It
turns out there's more to it. And so I got a job at Rockwell in the late 70s, and I was in a group that was doing both electronics and software because we were building some navigation devices for the Coast Guard. And it just turned out that they needed software people, and I was the new kid on the block, and
so away
well,
we went,
it was my lucky day. And so just go learn how, you know?
Yeah.
Just go dig in and figure it out. And so everything I've learned about computers has been really through the process of digging in when I didn't know what I was doing and feeling my way around and starting to learn it and becoming an expert by making mistakes.
Teaching yourself, basically.
Yeah.
And you write programs, you write scripts for things that screen readers won't read. You write scripts for them and make the screen reader read these things, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm pretty big into JAWS script writing these days.
Yeah? Well, it's a shame I can't do that full time, isn't it?
Yeah.
This wouldn't be enough money. Enter George.
Well, that's the issue, is whether there's enough money. People certainly need it done,
yeah.
But
oh, yeah.
Most of the people who need it done don't have very much money, so who will pay for it?
Well, I don't know. Anyway, before we go, I do want to ask you, have you figured out yet how to eat with chopsticks as a totally blind person?
No, I haven't tried it, but I'm told by a couple of people that it can be done. And I presume there are blind people in China that surely aren't starving. Either that or people are just, you know, excusing them and letting them pick up the bowl and go
That's
for
the
it.
Issue. You said that you thought you figured all the blind people in China simply starved to death.
No, I think they use their thumb and index fingers.
Yeah, they're like holding the nail.
It might be.
But then if there's a fork available, why would anybody eat with chopsticks? It doesn't make any sense.
No, I agree. It seems like an inferior solution. And I wonder whether they learned that from birds. You know, did they
know.
See bird beaks and think, that way you do that like that.
That's how you do that.
I don't know. It is a strange thing.
Well, also, besides being an electrical engineer and a supercomputer programmer and a radio man and a wild bull rider, you play music also, don't you?
Yeah. I don't do as much as I used to. I used to be more into musicianship than I am now. Played guitar and keyboards. But I just really haven't had the time. Lately, you know, I'm focused on something else. So.
And as a young teenager, you had a little minor local regional hit, did you not?
Well, yeah. Yes, sure did. Back in the 70s, we actually made a 45 RPM record, and if you'd like a copy, I still have one.
I would love to have.
I'd like to have about 600 copies.
Yeah, thank you. Garage is full.
Full of copies.
Probably get a jar of jelly with every record that you... And so the radio stations up in Iowa and around that area played your record?
Yep. Those are the days when you could actually approach a radio station and say, here, I got something, listen to it, and they'd play it. You can't do that now.
No. We have three or four radio people here in the room. We know you can't. Don't approach us.
No.
We're not playing your record.
Unless the price is right?
Unless the price is right.
Yeah.
Well, you are a super person, and you've done a lot of things, and I admire you very much. And I'm looking forward someday to sitting down and visiting with you and maybe... doing a little creative drinking.
Drink a cold one.
Yeah, man. Well, if I ever get down that way and have time, we'll definitely do it.
Well, I may have to come up there. We came to Minnesota last year to see Prairie Home Companion.
Well, that's close.
And that wasn't very far. And we'll tune around on the AM radio. Do you have plans to do another show on ACB? Do you have your next?
I don't have plans. I really don't know. I'd thought about going back and doing the snowman kind of presentation with a little different twist, but I haven't the time to do it now, and so I really don't have any definite plans at all.
Have you thought about doing maybe a computer Q&A hour per week?
There'd be so much stuff I wouldn't know. It wouldn't be.
Well, I don't think
pointless.
So. Well, don't call us. I'll tell you.
Yeah. I don't know why it doesn't do that. God, you know.
I don't know why it won't talk.
Yeah. I don't know why it locks up every 10 minutes.
Yeah.
That's right.
Well, you sent us a whole list of projects or subjects that we should talk about on the Blind Handyman. So maybe in a month or so we'll call you back and talk about a couple of them.
Deal. I'd like to know your guys' advice on how to do some soldering and some plumbing kinds of things and how to spread putty without getting your fingers stuck to it. I think there's got to be a way.
There's no way. It's like eating with chopsticks. You just get in there and do it, I suppose.
All right. Yeah.
Jim, you've been a very interesting guest, and we thank you very much. And we'll talk to you within a day or two and have you back on in 6 weeks or so.
Okay. Have a good show.
Thanks, Jim.
You bet.
Thank
bye-bye.
We'll be back with more of the Blind Handyman Show in just a moment.
Stream,
The Cafe,
ACB Radio Treasure Trove. You can hear
live, unpredictable internet radio
on ACB Radio Interactive. ACB Radio Interactive, playing music from
the 1930s and 40s,
the 50s and 60s,
the 1970s,
80s and 90s,
the hits of the new millennium.
ACB Radio Interactive comes to you from at least 6 time zones on 3 continents, bringing you the very best of
country,
top 40,
classic and modern rock,
new age,
folk,
the rare stuff out of the 50s,
jazz,
easy listening adult contemporary,
and more.
Live, unpredictable internet radio.
ACB Radio Interactive.
Don't risk the disappointment of missing a great ACB radio program. Join our announcements list today. Receive email about upcoming programs on all our channels and new features. To join, send a blank email now to announce-subscribe at acbradio.org.
That's announce-subscribe at acbradio.org.
Visit our website. Announcements about ACB radio delivered to you direct and free. Just another way to stay in touch with ACB radio. Hang out with other ACB radio listeners. Talk with the hosts. Provide suggestions about the future of ACB radio. It's all possible through the ACB radio friends list.
Thank you for being a friend.
Log on and sign up now. Send a blank message to friends-subscribe at acbradio.org. That's friends-subscribe at acbradio.org. And thank you for being a friend of ACB radio.
To the Blind Handyman on ACB Radio Mainstream. If you have an idea for a topic or project you would like us to discuss, let us know at our address, blindhandyman@hotmail.com. Now, back to the show with Don Patterson.
That would be you.
That's me, right. Well, like I said earlier, it is great to be back kind of on a regular schedule now.
Good to have you back.
Well, appreciate it. And today I want to talk about something. It's a must-have for every shop, even non-shop, just around the house. It's something that you've got to have. And, of course, I'm talking about a shop vac.
Really?
Yep. You just can't. I don't care if you're working on small engines, if you work on do auto mechanic, if you're a woodworker, if you're a pot maker or a chair caner, broom maker, whatever you do.
How many chairs can you cane in an afternoon?
Well, not as many as I thought.
Chair caner.
Chair caner.
But anyway, this is something that you just really need. And I'll tell you, of course, like everything else, they come in all sizes and all shapes and all prices. Of course, if you were like a major contractor or something, you'd want a big one. The thing that I found out when I bought my first one is it was sort of like overkill. I wanted this great big one. And then as the projects would come for me to use it, I'd say, it's too heavy to get out, and I'd put it off and everything. So the one that I really like and I highly recommend for just a small shop and around the house is a little 10-gallon wet and dry vac. And it's like the book was written about duct tape here, 1,001 uses for duct tape. Well, there's at least that many uses for your shop.
And it costs $19.95 at Walmart, right?
This one is probably, they're probably in a range that if you catch them on sale between $39 and $69 for the 10-gallon. Yeah. And it's light. You can actually hold it waist high with two fingers. I mean, and so, like I say, my other one was so big, I'd just put it off, getting it out. And, of course, in your shop, one of the major uses would be with your shop vac is a lot of power equipment, if you're into woodworking, has an exhaust that you hook your shop vac directly to. And if you're going to saw a board with your table saw or use your router, you just turn on your vac first. And
almost every decent piece of equipment has that little exhaust on the back, and they make a bag that goes over it. But if you've got a shop vac,
you just hook up the,
then you don't have the big mess that you end up with in the floor.
You just turn the vac on and then do your cutting, and then there you have it.
Mm-hmm.
And goodness, I mean, 10 gallons of you know, you have to empty them very little, and they're easy to empty. There's usually just three little clamps that holds the motor is on top with the filter, and you release these three little clamps, and it will take the motor off the canister, and then you can empty it. What I wanted to talk about major uses one critical area that I think they're good for is not to mention the track in the patio door. There's just, you can sweep and you can get down there and try to get it out with your hands, but if you've got the upright Hoover or vacuum cleaner, it just won't get it. But if you have a good shop vac, you can really get in there. But every month or so around any house that has central heating and air conditioner, of course, you have filter changing time for your units. And a real good use for your shop vac is just changing the filter is really not all. If you'll get inside, sometimes you return air. I know there are companies that clean your ducts and everything. You can't do that with the shop vac. But just right around as you're changing the filter, just get that shop vac and vacuum out that return air.
Yep.
And it's good for like your condenser coils on, like, especially if anybody using window units or around your furnace. If you have it in a closet type furnace, this lint tends to collect. And actually, sometimes can really be a fire hazard. And of course, if you get maintenance, you know, people to come and do that, it's fairly expensive. But this is a project that you can do pretty much whether you're blind or sighted. I mean, you can feel this lint. And that's another thing. The technique that I use when I use my vac is nothing wrong with just sitting down on the floor, and I kind of use my hand over in front of the nozzle, the suction hose on the vac, and as sort of a little scoop, and you can tell what's you know, you can really feel
what you're getting in.
And another great place while you're cleaning vents, and this is something that you might really want to do every 6 months. I know my parents at one time had a refrigerator that lasted 25 years, and I don't think it was ever done. But underneath your refrigerator, where its condensing coil and its mechanism is especially if you have pets, even more specifically, if you have cats, the hair and the lint and the dust will just collect around this your cooling apparatus of your refrigerator. And it's very easy to do. Get your shop vac over there, and you can... Sometimes in the refrigerator, you have to open the doors, both, especially like if it's a side-by-side. Open both doors, and there's a little grill work that will pop. Usually just snaps right on the bottom of your icebox. And you'd probably want to unplug the refrigerator. And then you can just reach up under there with your hose and everything, and there's a condensing coil and a fan and sort of thing, and you can just vacuum all that out. There's usually a pan that collects moisture. Most of the time, if that refrigerator's working right, that should be dry.
Should be.
But anyway, that's a great maintenance, a great thing.
And if you haven't done it several years, you'll be absolutely amazed at how much junk is under there.
That's right.
But and like I say, and then, you know, while they're not recommended, another use that I do mine, after you've cleaned out about 98% of the fireplace, like with your bucket and your shovel,
I've done that.
I'll take the shop vac and just get in the rest, because I'm in the process of, you know, remodeling my house, and so I clean my fireplace real good and paint the inside with a black heat resistant. It's almost like stove black, if you've ever familiar with wood stoves. And have the fireplace just spick and span. So I really hate to use it this year, but I will. But, you know, you wouldn't want to clean the majority of the soot with the shop vac. But after you get it about 98%,
Alex,
it's great.
Before we get too far away from air conditioners, I have got the pan stopped up. I've gone outside and gotten on the drain, and if you can get it to fit, you can suck that drain clear with your shop vac.
That's right.
I've done that many, many times. I bought a little one that I think cost $20 at Walmart, the first one I ever had, and I wore it out doing just that very thing, emptying that drain.
It's a must-have for any, just around the house or any type of shop that you have. You just got to have one.
Got to have a shop vac. And if you don't have one, you can borrow mine or Pat's.
Yeah. And you get them anywhere, you know, Black & Decker, Craftsman, just several companies make them.
Oh, they make big ones. My brother, I think, paid a couple $100. I've got a huge one that's in the shop. And for my wood shop, it's exactly what we need. But you can get them from, you know, $30 to $200.
Absolutely.
You don't have
to, thing to have.
No filter in them, no nothing.
That's right.
All right, how much time we got, Tommy?
Okay, we've got about 10 minutes.
10 minutes?
Yes.
What are we going to do for 10 minutes?
Ah!
Huh?
Discussion.
I guess we could. Are you? Is that Shopback? Is that it?
That's it.
That's it for Shopback. Yeah. All right. You can go see Ruby now, right?
Pretty soon. Yeah.
Don wanted to talk a little about something that's very blind friendly thing to do, unless you have to put a new one in, and that is replacing doorknobs.
That's
if
right.
You've never done it.
Changing that doorknob would be today's little blind-friendly project.
And it's very blind-friendly, too.
It is. It's whether you got a closet door with a broken doorknob or just one that doesn't turn right or an outside door or whatever you got. Doorknob or deadbolt lock, even. Either way would be something blind-friendly to change. But just basically, on your doorknob, you would... Now, again, they come in different flavors, but the best ones, the easiest ones, are the ones that have a Phillips screw on each side of the little cap that's on each side of the doorknob.
And usually that's on the inside
of the
room.
That's on the inside of the door. Yeah. Yep, usually on the inside. I have seen them, though, that have a cap with no screws, kind of a cap that turns.
I've seen that. You take that off, and the screws are under the cap. I've seen those.
Well, yeah, you have to take off the doorknob by pushing in on a little button. And then when you pop the inside part of the doorknob off, then you can usually turn this cap a half a turn, and usually it'll just come off.
Yeah.
It'll just come off in your hand. And then the part that little cap attaches to, usually then you have like two screws that hold that on.
But most of them that you see are going to have those screws on the inside of the...
Most of the better ones seems like have the screws on the inside. The other ones are a pain in the butt. I mean, they're bad. I hate to mess with those kind. But the ones with the Phillips screws...
Yeah.
If you got that, you got it made. But anyway, take out the Phillips screws, take the inside doorknob off, take out the Phillips screws, and then it's after that, the outside knob should just pull off.
It will, usually.
And then after that, all you really have is you go to the edge of the door, and you have the little part that goes in there. What do you call that? A little... Not a striker, but the little thing that goes in and out of the...
Well, it may be called a striker because the thing it hits is called a striker plate.
Yeah, the striker plate. Yeah, it goes on the baseboard. That's right. Yeah. It does.
Yeah, it's called a striker plate that goes on the door frame.
Uh-huh.
So it may be called a striker.
I guess it's a striker.
Anyway, it's the thing that actually closes and holds the door closed.
That's right. But anyway, take out two screws, one on the top, one on the bottom, usually Phillips screws, and that will just slide right out.
So you've got three pieces now.
So you've actually got three pieces in your hand, supposedly. Get your new one, and you would put in the striker part first.
Yeah.
And the same thing, put the two screws back in. And usually they're adjustable for different size doors. And you would find the setting by sliding this little thing with a hole in it back and forth. And usually the outside part of the doorknob will have a stem. And you'll stick the stem in through this hole.
Actually, there's a stem, and then there's a thing on each side of the stem that you got to line up, don't you?
Yeah, that you got to line up to the stem.
That's the hard part.
That's the trickiest part.
Yeah.
I guess would be lining
up. Of course,
up.
And if this thing that you put in the side of the door that fits in the side of the door that we're calling the striker, you have to decide which way it goes, because if you put it in backwards,
you sure do.
The door won't close.
Yeah, that's and it has a little angle.
Yeah, that's it. It has an angle.
It's an angle thing. That's an easy mistake to do, because when I moved in the house that I'm in now, one of the closet doors would not close for that very reason. The striker was in backwards.
Somebody had put the striker plate in backwards, the actual doorknob thing in backwards.
The striker.
In backwards.
That would be a doable deal. That's possible to do.
So you need to put it in where the beveled edge goes if you're closing the door, where it would, you know, you'll see that.
Toward the outside, the bevel would go toward the outside.
Yeah, so that you can, that the door will close, and it will, as you close it, it will slide and push this thing in and then catch in the striker plate.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so we got that on, and we're lined up the...
And usually when you change the doorknob, too, especially, you know, you buy the set, you know, of course, the new striker plate will come with it. And if you're going to change one, you might as well change both of them. You know, it's just one of those type of
and,
deals.
And don't take a doorknob off and figure, well, this doorknob is tight, it's not working, I'll put WD-40 in them. WD-40 does not work well with those kinds of things.
Yeah, it just needs to be replaced.
And they're cheap.
They're cheap.
Just go somewhere and replace it.
sometimes you need a new outside key for one reason or another, and it's just, you know, just my, rather than calling a locksmith, if you ever have a big major key problem, just sometimes it's just better to, cheaper to just to buy an outside doorknob or the whole new deadbolt, like we talked about.
If it's a deadbolt, usually you can take it to a hardware store and they can re-key it. They can make another key that works in your deadbolt, and you don't sacrifice it. Because a good deadbolt is $25, $28, $20, $30. So you can just have it rekeyed. Do what?
I'm fixing to have to replace the entry lock on my front door at my house, and it has this sort of with the handle that comes down, you know,
rather than a knob,
it has a handle with this push button, and these things are, we're talking $75 or $80 for that whole setup.
Yeah. But it's all got to be replaced?
Yeah, it's the old, and it doesn't, it's just stopped working.
It looks real neat, though. I mean, it looks, you know, it looks expensive. I guess it is expensive.
Yeah.
Why it looks expensive, Phil. Good. Very good. Good. You're like that, aren't you? Anyway, replacing doorknobs and deadbolts is an absolutely blind, I've been doing that since I was 10 years old, so it's a...
It's a great blind-friendly project.
Doable.
Would you come to my house and do this?
Do what now?
Would you please come to my house and do that?
And do some things like that?
Sure.
No. Yeah. By the way, Jan is here with us. Jan is an old radio lady from years ago. She's retired from radio, as all of us.
Easy on the old part.
As some of the rest of us have.
I don't blame you.
And you'll hear Jan in just a minute doing the closing to our show.
Exactly.
Hear, and this will be the first time she's ever heard the...
Do
you want to push the email, Donald Trump?
Well, I was just going to say again, always send that email. We sure like receiving email. And if you'll just send to blindhandyman@hotmail.com and the MSN Messenger. If you have your MSN Messenger up and working and want to add us to your MSN Messenger, if you'll put in our Hotmail address in your Messenger, go to new contact, put in our Hotmail address, blindhandyman@hotmail.com, and we will be glad, more than happy, to add you to our MSN Messenger. And at some point, we'll get that up and running and maybe do some discussions, either text or voice or something, with the MSN Messenger at some point down the line.
Well, hopefully we had kind of talked about maybe sending, letting everybody know what subjects we were going to talk about. That is, if we know.
If we can decide
what we're going to talk about, we'll send you a little message, and if you think it's interesting, you can listen. If you don't, you can go watch The Simpsons or whatever on television, which would be preferable to listening to us. MSN Messenger and blindhandyman@hotmail.com. We hope you'll email us. And I guess that'll do it for another show number 10. Exciting.
Wrap up another one.
Thank you, Don Patterson, for visiting with us. You'll be here every week from now on, right?
As far as I know.
As far as you know. If Emily lets you, huh?
If Emily lets me.
It's good to have you back, though.
Glad to be back.
Nice to have you back. Everybody go out and buy a shop vac today. Don Shaw is with us. He's the one that checks the email, and that's blindhandyman@hotmail.com. And coming soon to a computer near you, the Blind Handyman website. We'll tell you more about that in the next couple of shows.
We sure will.
Tom, you've done it, sir.
I'm an excellent driver, by the way.
Yeah. You've run a perfect board today, Tommy.
Hey, it's not over
yet. If you don't screw up here at the last.
Not over yet, is it?
You've done fine. By the way, if you want to be a guest, give us a phone number, and we'll give you a call and set up being on the show. Just put your phone number in your email, and we'll give you a call, and we'll even pay for the call. What nice guys we are.
Sure will.
We'll see you next week on more of the Blind Handyman. Remember, I see, said the blind man, as he picked up his hammer and saw.
Produced for ACB Radio by Out of Market Productions, 1604 Southwood Drive, Lufkin, Texas. Phone 936-634-9500.